Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Safe Harbor Child Advocacy Center in this morning. Elizabeth McNally is back with us. And we have talked for a long time, Elizabeth, of you bringing people. And this is kind of a show and tell today. You have brought someone along.
I have, and thank you for having us back.
It's always great because I talk to you and I always tell you that I always learn something about what goes on and just the difficulties in this area that that you deal with kids and working with various agencies, and it's always a great time. But you have brought your board president.
Correct. I have brought Troy Skibo with me.
Good morning, Ted.
Morning, Troy. Good to have you here this morning.
It is. Thank you.
We have talked often about you on this show, about your work with Safe Harbor. You've been doing this now for a few years.
I have. I've been with the board since 2016, and I think I've been the acting president for the past 3.5-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
The work that's done by Safe Harbor, it's hard to even quantify how important it is to families and kids especially, and being able to get the right story and ultimately get convictions.
Right. We have a great staff, a dedicated staff that contributes to that, and that includes partnerships throughout the community, through the professional community, with law enforcement, prosecution, social services, mental health,
the nurses, medical,
the forensic nurses. Mm-hmm. So it's a combined effort.
Mm-hmm.
For us, for this area to have a safe harbor it's hard again to talk about how important that is for, again, families and kids.
Right. Unfortunately, the numbers are pretty high that we service. Now we service even a larger area. Elizabeth, you want to explain some of the additional localities that we service?
Sure.
In?
So starting with the partnerships that we've already kind of alluded to, we have formal partnerships with the City of Fredericksburg, Stafford County, Spotsylvania County, Caroline, and King George. And we, about 2 years ago, we expanded into Orange County. So we serve Orange County. And we're in the final stages of partnering with Essex County. So moving eastwards now, where there really is no CAC footprint in the Essex area. So, and we know that there's about, the population of Essex is about 11 or 12,000, I think. Those kids out there don't have access to a CAC at all, but they soon will.
Yeah, no, which yeah. is, and we have talked about that, of the areas that don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And talk a little bit about why it is important, Elizabeth, for a CAC to be in an area.
It's important because we know that abuse happens. So not everyone wants to admit that abuse happens, but it does happen. It happens everywhere, sadly. And it's important for kids and child abuse professionals to have places to go where kids can receive the treatment that they need in a way that's trauma-informed and doesn't re-traumatize them. So we provide a system within which they can begin to heal, as opposed to a system in which they get fragmented services and they can be re-traumatized. So before CACs existed, kids might have to go to talk to 8, 10, 12 different professionals about what happened to them. And just that process of having to retell their experience can re-traumatize them. So the CAC brings the professionals together who need to be involved with the child's case and provides the child a safe and welcoming place for them to talk about what's happened. So that's why it's important.
And Troy, when we talk about re-traumatizing, that's bad, but there's also then the likelihood that the person who's responsible, on a technicality or for whatever reason, walks free.
Yeah, absolutely. What Elizabeth was talking about with re-traumatizing is when the victims have to speak with professionals. Normally it's a deputy or police officer at first, and then a detective gets involved. And after a detective gets involved, it could be a prosecutor or social services at the same time with law enforcement. And then from there, if they have to seek medical attention from a forensic nurse or mental health professional, it limits the victim from having to tell the story over and over again and re-traumatizing them.
Like you said, you've been involved in this for a while, and I know, Elizabeth, you talk about just the importance of having a strong board behind you, and you've often talked about you have that strong board.
I do. I'm very fortunate. Very fortunate to have a strong board. And the Safe Harbor was founded in 2008, and the original board was largely comprised of people who were connected to the multidisciplinary teams that do the work, that do the investigations in partnership with the CAC. And our board is still largely comprised of people connected to the MDT. But we also have folks from the community who, we kind of refer to them as community representatives. So we have a retired elementary school principal on our board. We have an individual who works in the banking system. We have, who am I?
Forensic nurses.
We have two forensic nurses on our board.
Law enforcement, former Commonwealth attorney.
Correct, former Commonwealth attorney. So a really good
diversity.
Very good diversity, representative of the community, but also knows enough about
social services too.
Yes, thank you. Two individuals from social services. Has real depth of knowledge about what the CAC does and what we need to do to meet the needs of the community. While at the same time having representatives from the community at large.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ted, speaking of that, we do have some open slots for board members on our executive board. Not the executive board, but the board itself.
The board itself, yes.
Mm-hmm. And so if just want to let the audience know that if they're interested, we're definitely looking for...
Yeah, this is something that you have just a passion about.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
So we've got, I believe, two openings right now on our board. So we are looking to bring more individuals on the board, people who have a passion about child protection, child safety, kids healing. And they can reach out. Our contact information is on our website. They can give me a call if they're interested in learning more. They can also talk to Troy. I can get them in contact with Troy to talk more about what the opportunities are and what we're looking for.
SafeHarborVA.org. Quick break. We'll come back. A number of things to talk about this morning with Troy Skibo and Elizabeth McNally. And we'll return on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Troy Skibo, Elizabeth McNally here this morning from a Safe Harbor Child Advocacy Center, safeharborva.org, the website to find out more information, and Facebook. There's information too. Troy, for somebody like you that's been doing this, and you talked about the need for volunteers. Boy, to do this, I'm sure there are times it would be an eye opener of what's going on in the community, kind of the things that Elizabeth sees every day, but. There are some pretty heavy things, and situations going on, and thanks to you and others that decide to be involved in this. There are a lot of other things you could be involved with, but you see the need for Safe Harbor in the community.
Absolutely, like I said, we have a very diversified board of directors, and that really plays into our goal and our mission at Safe Harbor. And you're right, they get a chance to see things that is occurring in the community, and unfortunately it's not the best thing, some of the stuff that we have to deal with, but what we get out of it is the help that we are providing these children. The type of cases that come across our center isn't the best. However, it's reassuring knowing that we have a team of professionals that are there to help such victims. Mm-hmm. And how many CACs are there in Virginia?
There's 19 in Virginia.
So we're spread across the area, and we've talked about the area that we cover, which is quite large.
It is quite large. It's one of... Safe Harbor serves one of the largest geographic areas of the CACs in Virginia. So there's It is large.
It's quite large. So, but and we do have a large number of cases that come through. As you heard from our Save Jane fundraiser event, mm-hmm. We read off the names.
Nearly 10,000 names.
Save mm-hmm. It's John Doe and Jane.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. You start at noon, and this year you finished like at 8:45 or yep. something. Right. It was dark yep. at night, and that's how many names. And mm-hmm. it's the Save Jane event, which Elizabeth is a great. It teaches the community so much because mm-hmm. when you're talking about 1 year old, and there's too many of those really young really young.
Yes, there's so many levels of education that we can provide just through that Save Jane event. About most people who do know about Safe Harbor, very much connect us with you do forensic interviews, which is mm-hmm. the time that we're collecting a statement from a child. We do so much more than that. And Save Jane gives us an opportunity to educate the community about that, while at the same time educating the community about the fact that child abuse does exist and it happens here. So one of the ways we educate is, like you said, we can't interview a one-year-old. They're not talking. But we provide medical mm-hmm. attention for 1 year. We have a medical exam room through this partnership with Mary Washington Healthcare. Another thing that makes Safe Harbor unique, we're one of, I think now, 4 CACs in Virginia that have a medical exam room on site. So kids do not have to go into yet another system if they need medical attention. So we may need to provide photographs of bruises for a one-year-old. So they're coming to us for those services, not for forensic interviews. So yes, Save Jane not only allows us to teach the community that there's thousands of kids that are reported every year, but exactly what we do for kids from age 0 all the way up to 18.
Yeah.
It also enables us to provide some aftercare resources like mental health mm-hmm. Through RECSB, which is the Rappahannock Area Community Service Board, which is one of our
big partners. Yeah.
Very thankful that they're on board with us.
Yes. So we have, through that partnership, we have a mental health therapist deployed to RCAC full time. So she's there all the time, providing a full services to a caseload of, I think, about 30 kids at a time. And that is at no cost to the child or the caregiver.
Right, that's huge.
So we raise funds and, you know, to provide that service. So part of our goal is to make sure that kids have zero barriers to accessing services. So we don't want them to have to pay for mental health treatment.
And as we go along this morning, we're going to talk about the importance of giving, especially with the end of the year coming up. And if you're looking for good organizations and effective organizations to give to, keep Safe Harbor in mind. We'll talk about that. It is tough with what you do, Elizabeth, the fact that you can't, there's so much that you can't talk about.
Yeah.
And because I think a lot of us, sometimes you think, well, child, you know, I don't hear much about that. There can't be that much because I don't hear about it. And you don't hear, unless it's, you generally don't hear about it.
Right. You hear about the people being held accountable more so. Mm-hmm. So you'll see like police blotters, not the right term anymore, probably.
Press releases.
Yeah.
About those being held accountable.
But it's always that person. You're never talking.
Correct.
Very vague about the victim.
Confidentiality is super important, especially for children. And so behind the scenes, oftentimes when you're reading those, if it's a child victim, 9 times out of 10, Safe Harbor's involved in that case. But obviously we can't use the child's name, it's important to protect the confidentiality of children. We will always do that, but it means that we're somewhat hampered in our ability to talk to the community about the other end mm-hmm. of that. Troy was referring to earlier, we are in a position in the CAC is we get to see the arc of the child's healing because they're coming to us for therapy, which is also provided on site, and so we are privileged to be able to see those kids come back and see their healing. The community doesn't necessarily get to see that, and it's hard for us to talk about that.
You have talked about some cases, though, that have been just some real successes, and it's always so interesting when you tell those stories, and you can tear up with how some of these kids, you know, have come to you and just said, you know, for the first time, I'm happy.
Right.
Or things like that.
Or they express that through the way they look and the way they're be, you know, or they're more successful in school and their family relationships are more successful. We can see it too. And sometimes we get to see that when they're leaving from their very first appointment. They've had an arc of healing in that one appointment. And the way that I have seen that is, I think I've told you before, but I'll retell, the child who came to us who had been bounced around in foster care and had, you know, been abused, I think, by a foster care parent, came to us, was provided services. I think he was about 11 years old, was walking out the door. We were saying goodbye to him. Mm-hmm. He turns around and says to us, "This has been the best day of my life." I mean, after having a forensic interview and talking about the abuse that he suffered, and we provided the other services that we always do, and this child had already experienced some belonging that I was talking to you about earlier in connection with us. So we, again, privileged to see that, and so happy that he, just in that short period of time, felt some healing.
And the fact that you've got the partnership with Mary Washington and a lot of these other partnerships, and the fact that on your board when you talk about having social services involved in the various, the more people, the more experts that can that can be involved, help what you do and ultimately help this area.
Absolutely, and I mean it's all part of the coordinated response, and a CAC and a multidisciplinary team. What we're trying to do is provide a coordinated response to children. And that starts with our board and with the partnerships that we have. So our board is coordinated. Our board is knowledgeable. Our board is passionate. Our partnerships are with people who are passionate, knowledgeable, dedicated, and dedicated to providing that coordinated response. So we deliver that coordinated response in the CAC, but it has to start with the board.
Yeah, it's a lot of training that goes involved, too, with interviewing.
Everybody, I guess, that's involved, and you are able, that helps the whole process too, just to know how to handle these
interviews. Definitely, and to interview a victim, there's so many different barriers that have to be recognized by the interviewer. Age is one. Mm-hmm. There's other different medical conditions.
We're actually preparing right now to interview some children who have special needs, and so they have some difficulties with communication. They communicate in ways that other than verbal, and so we're actually reaching out around the state to some of our partners to bring in interviewers from around the state who have even higher level of training. So always looking to make sure that we meet those child's needs.
I always think back to whenever Empower House comes in, and Kathy Anderson will talk about abuse, and with Empower House, they talk about 1 in 4 people are victims, and so you hear those kind of statistics, and you just think, in my neighborhood, you start just counting, and you know stories that you don't know. It's the same that you're dealing with here. Mm-hmm. The numbers and the people in your neighborhood or in your school are much higher than you have any idea of, and that's what's you being there is so vital.
The current statistic is about 1 in 10 kids will experience abuse. And this is specific to sexual abuse before they're 18. I think it's 1 in 6 boys and 1 in 4 girls, to break it down by gender.
Yeah. But again, there shows you that there's so much going on that we don't know about.
And it's underreported. So that number is probably low.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's important to educate the community, too, about not only are we should all consider ourselves mandated reporters of abuse, but also that this community has a response in place. There is a response, so that kids can get what they need and go on to be healthy and productive in their own lives.
We often hear about mandated reporters with teachers and things like that, but you're right. We all, if you notice your kids are playing with someone and something doesn't seem right, there are avenues to at least have that investigated.
Correct. Anybody that has a concern about kids should make a report. I mean, everybody should consider themselves as mandated reporters. I always recommend to people to make a report both to law enforcement and to Child Protective Services. Go ahead and call both. Call your local law enforcement. And then Child Protective Services, their hotline in Virginia is 800-552-7096.
Give that one more time.
Yep, it's 800-552-7096. That's the Virginia Department of Social Services, their 24-hour Child Protective Services hotline.
And I guess don't be afraid if you've got a bad feeling about something or just want it investigated, don't be afraid to reach out.
Correct. And you can report anonymously. You're not required to give your name.
Yeah.
And so if that makes you feel more empowered to do it, just know that. People can also call Safe Harbor. We will make sure that you get connected to the right place. We don't take direct referrals from the community for right. our services. But if someone calls us with a concern about a child, we're going to make sure you get to the right, to the extent of, like, we'll even look up the localities that you're talking about and help you get the numbers in those localities.
And each tip is looked into thoroughly by law enforcement and social services. So it's very good to, if you think something's going on,
yeah,
to make sure that you report it, because, like Elizabeth said, there's a lot of things that are not reported.
Right, mm-hmm. The underreporting mm-hmm. is kind of what's scary, because mm-hmm. the numbers that you're dealing with are large enough, and for you, Elizabeth, to say, and that's underreporting, mm-hmm. just kind of, you know, takes your breath away to think what is going on.
Right.
So.
Right.
SafeHarborVA.org is the website. Elizabeth McNally is here, the executive director. Troy Skibo, the president of the board. More coming up as we talk about, we'll talk about just the importance of year-end gifts, and we'll talk about funding. That has been an issue, Elizabeth. You and I have talked about a number of times
yes.
on this show, and we'll get an update on that. When we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA, it's almost 8:30.
From the Fredericksburg.today online news studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station focused on Fredericksburg. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Good stuff this morning with Elizabeth McNally and Troy Skibo as we talk Safe Harbor Child Advocacy Center, safeharborva.org. One of the things, Elizabeth, that we have spent, we spent a number of shows this past year talking about funding. And one in particular, I remember contacting you just very panicky because I had gotten a fundraising letter from
last year.
Yeah, of talking about, and I even my friend and fellow coworker Bill Carroll, who's on the board, mm-hmm. I had said to him, "Is this true?"
Mm-hmm.
Because he talked about a massive cut in funding that you were looking at.
Mm-hmm.
That you took a look at that and thought, "How do they exist?" Things sort of evened out a little bit as the year went on, but as we look at the end of the year and talk about year-end giving, where do you stand?
Yeah, so thank you for recapping my trauma around funding. no, but thank you for recapping.
I did. After I talked to Bill, I sent you I remember sending you.
Yeah, you did.
And I said, yeah. You know, what's happening here?
Yeah.
It was
a crisis.
Yes, crisis.
So at that time, we were standing to lose 60% of our Victims of Crime Act funding, which is our biggest pot of funding at Safe Harbor. And it's also typically the biggest pot of funding for most CACs in Virginia. And so we were all standing to lose about 60%. What happened after that is that the Virginia General Assembly stepped in, and they, for two budget cycles, allocated money to replace what would have been the 60% cut. So VOCA funding is federal. So the General Assembly stepped in Virginia and helped resolve that for a two-year period. Meanwhile, the VOCA pot of funding is still insecure. So we're still doing advocacy with our federal representatives in Congress around two bills that are currently we're trying to collect co-sponsors for them to basically correct what goes into VOCA to
yeah.
make it broader, the funding that can flow into VOCA. So VOCA has not been fixed. So
that's a concern.
It's still a concern. It could be that if VOCA doesn't get fixed and money doesn't flow into VOCA, we will see that the repercussions of that maybe in 12 months because we have Virginia that stepped in temporarily to assist. So it's still very important for us to get the VOCA fund fixed and for money to be flowing into to VOCA.
Because as we have talked about, the numbers aren't going down. This is not like an issue that, well, we've got a pretty good handle on this.
No.
There's not, and unfortunately, the world we live in, and especially the numbers we talk about are underreported.
Right.
Every dollar counts.
Every dollar counts, and the services that we provide are critical, and it requires money to continue providing them.
We do reach out to localities that we do service, and they do provide some small funding towards the CAC.
Thank you for mentioning that.
We really appreciate the localities stepping up and doing that. It goes a long way. But that's another way that we have some funding. And then we also have two fundraisers. Our three biggest ones are the first – is probably going to be Save Jane and our golf tournament. So Save Jane will be in October of 2025.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And our golf tournament will be in April of 2025 of the following year, next year. And I guess the third would be private donations.
Correct.
From community members, businesses. We're extremely fortunate to have the support of our community. To help fund some of the services that we provide.
And it is important for the community to get involved because ultimately you're helping your neighbors.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And just the kids are involved are the kids that may be playing with your kids or in your school, in your church.
Will be the future people leading the region and
right.
providing services to younger kids and being law enforcement professionals, being nurses, they are the future leaders.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure that they're prepared and ready to lead the region.
Well, in every, is it April, when localities put the pinwheels out, and you see various things, something like that, or you hear a story where there's been an arrest or a conviction, and These stories are out there all the time.
They are. They seem, you're right. April is Child Abuse Awareness Month, so we are trying to bring more awareness to the fact that there's child abuse, but it's happening all the time. And the stories are always there.
Yeah. And unfortunately, things, we talk about how great technology is and all these wonderful things that our little small screens can do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it also has, I'm sure, is a challenge to what you do. That it just makes it that much easier, and the access that people have, it's scary.
Access to kids is much easier, correct?
Yeah.
And it opens up an entirely new, well, I shouldn't say it's new because it's not new really, but for the CACs, it opens up an entire new area in which we need to receive more training to be able to provide kids the service. So a forensic interview for a child who's been abused through electronic means looks different than a forensic interview for a child who's been abused by touching,
right.
by physical touch.
Yeah.
And they are both forms of abuse. But because of how the law is written, kids need to be interviewed in a slightly different way about abuse that's technology facilitated. So it means that the CACs have to be learning all the time.
Hmm.
And again, that costs money too to stay up to date on what is a very quickly changing field. So you make a really good point.
Well, and Troy, when you talk about these local fundraisers and just the community getting involved, there really is no organization that would say, well, I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, and you keep it up, but that doesn't affect us.
Mm.
This affects across the board.
100%.
Everybody.
The different variety and diversity of victims, you can't put a number on it. You can't put it's everybody. It's everybody that we associate with, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. If it hasn't happened to you, it's happened to somebody that you care about.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be a caregiver whose child has been abused by someone, a coach, or and you need support and able to in order to be able to help your child heal. So it's like you said, it's it, everybody is impacted by it.
And I'm sure, Elizabeth, one of the other things is something like cancer. And we all can say, well, we all know somebody who's been impacted by cancer or some kind of disease. This isn't the kind of thing that you always talk about or that you know about. Right. It can be happening right next door, and you never have an idea, or you. So this is one of those things that we all have been impacted, but we just don't know it.
Right, and in a very kind of generic way, there isn't shame attached to having cancer. People feel shame about either, you know, being abused or that their child has been abused and they didn't know. There's just so much shame connected to it that people, and that's one of the reasons that it's underreported as well, because of shame and because of manipulation. That part of abusing a child oftentimes is that they have been manipulated. I think the shame aspect is what makes a big difference between like what you were saying, like cancer. Nobody has a problem really saying I have cancer. I mean, like,
no.
There's no shame attached to it. It's something you have
but
no control over.
But this should rather not anybody know about.
Right.
Yeah. And Ted, I just want to reiterate about what Elizabeth said. When you see the accountability in the newspaper on a media release or a press release, there are so many dedicated professionals that come together to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not one person. It's a team effort of highly trained professionals who have a voice for that victim.
And it's tough, I'm sure, for all those professionals to go from these, you know, case to case to case and
it is.
Go home every night.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
And not carry it with you. You've talked in the past, Elizabeth, just about, you know, you're always looking to hire people because there is a large degree sometimes of burnout or having to watch that and having to kind of coach. Part of the many hats you wear is just coaching people to be able to, because sometimes I don't know how you go home and go ahead and or just even going to the store and just looking around at people and not trusting anybody.
Yes. Yes. You know, you're starting to experience secondary trauma when you look at all of life's kind of normal processes and are start questioning, like, is there something bad happening going on there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you're just in the grocery store and you, starting to look at people like, it's a constant. I mean, that's something that Safe Harbor is constantly looking at and is a big priority for Safe Harbor is how do we ensure that our paid staff and our MDT partners have access to help assistance if they're starting to experience what we call secondary trauma or burnout, which is slightly different. And so it is a big part of my job to make sure that our staff are as well taken care of as they can be and that they're taking care of themselves too and recognizing when this is kind of happening.
A lot of our professional partners do have an internal wellness team to look out for their personnel to make sure that they're not suffering from secondary trauma or burnout.
Mm-hmm.
Another portion of what we try to provide is the educational piece. And so we will go to different events, whether it's National Night Out, we'll advocate at board meetings, the importance of our professional partners to get the funding and positions that they're asking for, because we can provide them real numbers of what we are seeing come through our center and that are being prosecuted. So it's important for us to tell these localities, whatever locality it might be, that you don't have enough detectives interviewing investigating some of these crimes, or you don't have enough social service workers or nurses, any prosecutors, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important for us to educate people. We like to go to community events, set up a table so we can educate the community about what we do and what we need and what the community needs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure when you break it down, when you do break it down locality by locality, and you just think, to pick Spotsylvania as an example, The numbers would be, to a lot of people, would be scary and concerning.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go to Save Jane for a half hour and hear those. You don't know where those, you don't know names, you don't know where they're from.
Yeah.
But just the fact, just the ages and the numbers that just keep coming at you.
Mm-hmm. And then each of them have a story.
Each of them has a story, yes.
And that is what a lot of people don't understand. They just hear the names, right?
Right.
But each of them have a story.
Yeah.
And it's our goal to make sure that at the end of that story, they have a positive outcome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes the Save Jane event so effective.
Yes.
Mm.
That. And a lot of times when you hear people get choked up or just go through those numbers, or it's more than just going through the names that you're looking at, the John Doe, mm-hmm. to see those names when they're going through it slow and get emotional, you look at it and you think there's a story
they're
somewhere.
They're connecting to something within themselves,
yeah.
Probably. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting. A lot of times people, especially when elected officials do it for the first time,
mm-hmm.
I think all of a sudden it's suddenly you're looking down at that sheet and you see that this keeps going.
The names just keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why it's a great fundraiser and in a great kind of an information
awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awareness
mm-hmm.
for you all to mm-hmm. be able to do that.
And we're always looking for people to either sign up for Save Jane and read off names
mm-hmm.
or I will say our golf tournament fills up very, very fast.
It does.
So once it gets out there, if you are interested, to
yeah.
make sure you sign up quickly.
Yeah.
We put it out on our
It'll be out on social media and we'll start advertising it probably like late January. But the golf tournament will be in April. Can't remember the exact date. I should know that, but it will be in April, but we'll start advertising it like.
And a lot of people like to do that. The golfers sign up for those kinds of
events. It's very popular.
It is. It's
yeah.
it's a way to be able to provide funding for and you depend
on
it.
Oh, it's a popular and a successful golf tournament, and the people who participate in it really enjoy the day too. But it's very it's very effective for us in terms of fundraising.
We provide a great experience for not only the attendees, but also the donors. We're always looking for title sponsorships.
Mm-hmm.
And you can reach out to Safe Harbor. And
mm-hmm. SafeHarborVA.org.
Mm-hmm. Speak to Elizabeth about
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
No, it is. It's a great way to, and you're able just in that kind of setting to provide some of this information.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And because it's out there and there are so many needs and more, like I say, more community groups. And if you're part of a budget committee at wherever you're working at,
right?
Look at this, because it's Safe Harbor isn't that's for somebody else.
It's, right.
It's not any economic group or you name it. It's across. You're dealing with it across the board.
Child abuse does not discriminate.
Yeah.
It happens. Socioeconomic backgrounds, genders. It does not discriminate, yeah. And just as a side note, in terms of groups that you were mentioning, I'm spending more time, and I'm happy to go out and talk to community groups about what Safe Harbor does. So if you have a day coming up that you'd like, me to come out and talk to your group about what we do and how funding can help us and what impact we make in the community, just call Safe Harbor. Ask for me. I'll be happy to come out.
You put on. I deal with you. I don't deal with you, but you come in 3-4 times a year,
mm-hmm.
sometimes more, and we talk about these things. And it's important to be educated about the needs, but also the what you're able to provide and
mm-hmm.
the partnerships with Mary Washington Hospital and others.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and thank you for having me.
Oh, it's always
yeah.
and to bring Troy in today. It's just an added bonus to have his smiling face to begin my day. SafeHarborVA.org. Elizabeth McNally is here along with Troy Skibo. Quick break. We'll wrap this up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA. And we're back. Town Talk this morning with Elizabeth McNally and Troy Skibo. Safe Harbor Child Advocacy Center. SafeHarborVA.org. Before we get out of here this morning, I guess couple of items that we've talked about, Troy. One of the things is just looking for board members. You're president of the board, and you don't have to be a professional in this area. You just have to care about the area, I guess.
Absolutely, we're always mm-hmm. looking for anybody who's passionate about the topic, and we would welcome you to reach out to us, see if you're a good fit. Ted, I think you'd be a great fit if you're interested.
No, I have seen eyes looking at each other. We'll talk. We'll talk. Elizabeth and I have really had some in-depth discussions on this over the years, and I have learned a lot about safe harbor and what you do. But yeah, you have another board member sitting here anonymously in the background, and I know he's been. I can feel his eyes looking at me. So yeah, we'll talk. It's this is the kind of thing that's happening all around us, and whether it's funding or volunteering, whatever involvement, you can make a difference.
Correct. Each person on the board brings a different perspective. It could be a fundraising background. It could be a legal background, law enforcement background, or a professional, you know, medical or social service background. Any background can contribute to our mission and our goal. And that's what I don't think a lot of people understand is you don't have to be, you know, a professional in a certain type of position because each person brings something to the table.
When you got involved, I mean, you've had a background in a lot of things going on in the community over the years. Were you surprised? Was there anything that surprised you getting involved with Safe Harbor?
No, I got involved in 2016, 27 plus years in law enforcement. And when I joined the board, to see the different variety and diversity of people who sat on the board,
it
was welcoming. And I just felt that I could contribute, you know, something to the board. And so, and then I learned from my counterparts that each of them brought something pretty special, different views, different ideas. And it has really boosted us into something that I never thought that we would get to. Our center has expanded. Our localities that we service has expanded. Our personnel has expanded. So I know she won't say this, but Elizabeth is our backbone to our CAC.
She's a rock star.
She is. She's 100% a rock star. And I can't go away without saying appreciate everything that our board does, our personnel at Safe Harbor, and then our professional partners that we have to deal with on a daily basis. It means a lot.
It's tough to talk about this stuff, but you do a great job, Elizabeth, of doing that and presenting the needs, but also presenting how fortunate we are and the professionals that work together in this area. We often don't see some of these groups always wanting to work together, that they'd rather stay among in their little silo, and you don't see that with Safe Harbor.
Right. It takes a big commitment from the partners to be able to do it right.
Yeah.
And you're right, there are communities out there where it doesn't work as well because there are major partners who aren't at the, who choose to be not at the table.
Right. We know how to do this. Leave it to us. We don't want to work with
them. So it is a huge commitment, and we are very fortunate to have the partners. And with all the jurisdictions that we do formally partner with, they all work a little bit differently. And so it's interesting to see how they work, but they're all so committed and dedicated to the coordinated response. That's not in their minds, that's not an option.
And if you're an organization, look at some kind of funding for Safe Harbor in the new year. If you're an individual, take a look at it, because ultimately you know somebody involved here. You just don't know that you know somebody.
Right.
And that's the thing. And
exactly.
The more funding you have, whether it comes from some of the grants and some of the sources, some of the federal and state sources, but also the local sources.
The local support is very important. Yeah. Both morally and financially.
Right. But the more local funding you have, the more you can do.
Right.
The more
kids we can reach.
Yeah. The more you can, whether it's staff, whether it's training, whether it's whatever. Well, thank you so much. To be continued, as always. Troy, great to have you here. Come back again.
I really appreciate you having us.
And we'll do this again soon. We'll have you.
Absolutely.
We'll have you back. SafeHarborVA.org. Elizabeth McNally. Elizabeth, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Have a great holiday. And
you too.
We'll see you soon.
Thank you so much.
SafeHarborVA.org. Elizabeth McNally and Troy Skibo in this morning. Thank you for listening. We will see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg.